Blog Talk Radio.
Good afternoon, everyone. This is Blogger News on the radio. My name is Simon Barrett, and I will be your host for the next 90 minutes, or until my producer cuts the power, whichever comes first. This show is a little different from our regular fare. It is going to be about law enforcement and the court systems, and more importantly, what happens in small towns. We're going to talk about three stories, each of which make my stomach churn. Two are old cases, cold cases, but they still need resolution. The other case is live, it's here and now, and it concerns the sexual abuse of a three-year-old child. I can't think of anything more horrendous. We have some great guests, so sit back and fasten your seatbelts, because the sparks are about to fly. Our switchboard will be open shortly, and the dial-in number, if you have any questions or comments for us, is area code 646-378-1120. Okay, I'm going to start with a very old and... Oh, and if people need information on how to pick this show up from the internet, just go to www.blogtalkradio.com and you will see a link to it on their front page. Okay, let's wind our calendar back to the early 1970s. An 18-year-old is viciously beaten and raped, also kept in confinement for 3 or 4 days, yet the cops did absolutely nothing. That 18-year-old is actually my wife, Jan. Jan, tell us your story.
Briefly, he's a man I worked for that I trusted. I've lived with him and his family. Well, not with him, but at his family's home. And I trusted him with my life. And he asked me to go with him to pick up a television. And we stopped at their house on the way from where we worked at. And when I went in the house to get to the bathroom, and he was supposed to be picking up a lawnmower out in the yard. And when I come out, he was standing there waiting for me and attacked me and kept me there all night until early the next morning. But he raped me 4 times that night. And I tried to get away a couple of times, pulled me by the hair of my head and kept me on the bed, held me down by ropes, and raped me and kept me there. And then the next day, he brought me back to his wife's house and where we were staying at, and put a padlock on the door at night where I couldn't get out. He told his wife that he picked me up from a bar that I had went to and got drunk and had a fight. And that's why I was all beat up. I had bruises from one end of me to the other. Both my lips were busted. I had 2 black eyes and broken ribs. And he kept me there, wouldn't let me talk to nobody, wouldn't let me out of his sight, until one day he had to go into town to get supplies, and he told his wife he was taking me with him. But she stopped him and told him no, that she needed me there that day. And after quite a bit of arguments over it, he left. But before that, he told me if I was gone when he come back, he would look me up and kill me. And as soon as he was gone, a friend of mine was in the place where we were at, and I begged him to please take me and get me away from there. And he did, and I did leave. And whenever I went, the first chance I got to come back with with my sister and her husband. We went to the cops, and they laughed at me. They said there was no way this man would have done something like that to me. He was a fine, upstanding gentleman, businessman of the community, and they would not even listen to me. The DA's office told me that I could not prove anything, so they wouldn't even listen to my case. Nobody would listen. So I was forced to just leave and just swallow it all and live with that all these years because nobody would listen. And as far as I know, he's in prison now, but not from me. But it did give me a lot of satisfaction to know that at least he's in there where he can't hurt nobody else again. But it's a shame because the man did hurt somebody else, and that's why he's in prison, because he raped again.
And this was in a small town?
Very small town, very few people. And, of course, yes, this was 30-somewhat years ago. It was in the early 70s, but it doesn't matter. They should have been there to help me when I needed it. And when I hear of a case now where nobody helps, the cops are not there, the ones that are supposed to be protecting us are not there to help us, it really gets to me. And that's why I think I feel like this case is really, really important to me to try to help.
Right. I mean, as far as I can see, Jan's case is a clear example of someone prominent in the community who is above the law, and that just should not be. I mean, we have to stop it. Jan, I know this was very hard for you to share this information. It took me months to get her to tell the story to me, and her telling it on the radio, I know, is a hugely, hugely difficult thing for her to do. But Jan, I really do appreciate you doing this. I think it really is a great example of what's wrong with small town justice.
I agree.
I want to move on to another cold case. Actually, it shouldn't be a cold case. It should be a closed case. It involves two people, a tavern owner, Richard Scharf, and his barmaid, and I believe it was her first day on the job. Her name was Patricia Freeman. This happened in 1981 in McHenry County, Illinois. Richard and Patricia were found shot, execution style. It looked like a gangland killing. Paul, tell us a thumbnail sketch about the case and where it sits today.
Sure. First of all, my father's name is Ronald. Richard was
his
brother.
Oh, I'm sorry. I do apologize.
That's okay. That's okay. June 2nd, 1981, my father was gunned down in the back of his tavern with his barmaid. At the time, we really didn't know who did it. A good friend of my father's, Jim Hager, he was considered a suspect at one time, but he made mention to the McHenry County Sheriff that he thought that maybe it was either Patricia Freeman's ex-boyfriend or a gentleman by Larry Newman. Larry Newman was a two-time murderer already. He was sent to prison for 125 years back in the 50s for a murder that he did. And coincidentally, it was a bar owner and a newspaper person outside. He felt like he was shortchanged like $2 or something like that, and came back with a shotgun a couple of days later and took care of business. And like I said, he was paroled after about 16 years. My father was, we were all from McHenry at that point in time, and Larry Newman was from McHenry. So my father knew Larry Newman. Larry Newman was part of what was called the Hole in the Wall gang. If you're familiar with the movie Casino, Casino was actually based on the Chicago Outfit or the Chicago Mob. Joe Pesci played a role. I think his name in the movie was like Nicky Santino or something like that. But he was actually based on Chicago Outfit enforcer Tony Spilotro. Tony Spilotro had a lieutenant named Frank Collado. Frank Collado was his right-hand man from Chicago, and they were out in Las Vegas taking care of the Chicago Outfit's interest in the Las Vegas Skim. The Las Vegas Skim is where they were skimming money off the top of casinos and sending that money back to Chicago, Kansas City, and Milwaukee. So Frank Collado got into a situation with Tony Spilotro where Tony Spilotro put a hit out on Frank Collado. They were afraid that he was going to talk because they had a bus go down bad on the 4th of July of 1981 at a place called Bertha's. And that's where the FBI got the hole-in-the-wall gang or caught him in the act. And Larry Newman was part of that hole-in-the-wall gang. So Frank Collado, instead of either spending the rest of his life in prison or more than likely being gunned down by the Chicago Outfit, turned government witness. And back in 1982, he provided a story that collaborated with Jim Hager. Jim Hager told the McHenry County Sheriff a year earlier that Larry Newman's ex-wife was in my father's bar, and she was acting up and whatnot, and my father threw her out of the bar. Frank Collado was there at his restaurant when Larry Newman received a phone call from his ex-wife, and he was extremely upset. We explained to Frank that what my father did was disrespect, and Frank Collado tried talking him out of it. But a couple weeks later, Larry Newman flew out to Chicago, killed my father, came back to Las Vegas, and told Frank Collado about it. So there was two gentlemen, Jim Hager, Frank Collado. They never knew each other. They had never met. They never knew each other existed. But 1 year apart from each other, they were talking about the same place and time. And that was the time that Larry Newman decided that he was going to kill my father. And then shortly thereafter, he did. Recently, my former babysitter, who is actually Jim's daughter, Holly Hager, was riding in the car with Jim and her son, and they were talking. It was a long trip, and he asked her father who he thought may have killed my father, and he brought up Larry Newman. So when Holly got back to her home, she started Googling Larry Newman, and immediately came up on a site, I think it was a serial killer site, that this Larry Newman was from McHenry. She kept on Googling further, and she tied it back to a book. The book was an autobiography that was just released in November 2007 called Collado. So it was the autobiography of Frank Collado, and in there describes my father's murder. They didn't mention my dad's name or anything like that, but there was enough information in there that we realized it was the murder of my father and Patricia Freeman.
The book was actually co-authored by Frank Collado and my good friend Denny Griffin, and I have a copy of it, and it's on page 130. It is clearly a description of the double murder and the why. But even with this evidence, you're not getting very far, are you, Paul?
Well, the case has been reopened, and we were certainly given some milestones back in November. I did an interview with NBC News 5 Chicago, and we, meaning Holly and myself, did an interview with Carol Marine at the beginning of November, and we kept on putting off the airing of that because we wanted to give McHenry County an opportunity to make a statement, and what they wanted to do was also make an arrest and provide a statement. That was back in November. We gave them 2 weeks, then another 2 weeks, then another 2 weeks, and ultimately Channel 5 decided that they were going to air the program regardless. And since then, we haven't made any arrests. I'm not really sure. I know the case is open. I'm not really sure where they are with the case. I'm not provided a lot of information, so I really don't know.
So, there it is. Two cases. They're both decades old. They both happened in small towns. Two great examples of law enforcement just basically dropping the ball. Two cases where justice has been denied. Jan has long since given up her quest to get justice. In fact, it took a lot of persuasion to even get her to talk about it. Paul is still very much on the hunt for justice, and I do hope he gets it. The Larry Newman that he talks about is in fact dead. He died in prison a number of years ago. It should be a rubber stamp in my mind, you know, to close this case and, more importantly, give some closure to Paul's family. I know that McHenry County's Lieutenant Zanke was mightily surprised when I called him up and asked for an update. I mean, no one does that. So, let's turn our attention to a very current situation, and a situation that I personally find very, very disturbing. It's a real case, and it's unfolding in Northern California. Auburn's a small town about 40 miles northeast of Sacramento. Ilea Bedwell is a delightful 3-year-old girl, and there is evidence. My wife Jan and I have been poking around in this case for the past week. In fact, it's absorbed most of our waking hours. And we're convinced that there is enough evidence that she has been sexually abused. There is definitely some wrongdoing going on. I hear our listeners saying, well, call the cops, call CPS. Well, the cops, CPS, and just about everyone else you can think of has been called. And you know what? There is no one listening. Right now, it seems like the only people that are listening are Jan and I here at Blogger News. I'm delighted to run, well, actually, I'm not delighted to run this program. I hate running this program. I'd much prefer not to be doing it. But I am very pleased with the reception that we've received from the Bedwell family and their friends. And we have a number of guests on the line. Jan, who do we have with us?
Well, we have Tim Bedwell, which is the father of the grandfather of the child, Aaliyah. And we have Kara and Kristen, who are sisters of the mother, and Sarah, which is, I believe, Connie's best friend, and Daryl, who is Connie's boyfriend. Connie is the mother.
Okay, Daryl, let's start with you. Maybe you can give us a thumbnail sketch of what the case is all about, the history and where it stands today.
Okay. Well, like you guys stated, Aaliyah is about a little over three years old now. And when I met Connie, she was about 11 months old. And Connie and I started dating. Aaliyah had just turned one. And at that time, she had just moved back from Alaska, where she had moved with Tim, Connie's father, after her ex had abused her while she was pregnant and after she had her baby. She basically had to pick up. Tim helped her. They moved everything got up to Alaska, got away from him. And about when Aaliyah was 1 year old, she moved back down to try to get Aaliyah to have a relationship with her father, which is when Connie and I first met. And when her and I first started dating, I would be at Connie's apartment when her ex would come to pick Aaliyah up for visitation. And everything was good. Aaliyah was happy. She would see her dad, and she'd be joyful and happy to see him. She'd go with him, no problem. Everything was great. She would return. She'd have a good time. Nothing was ever wrong. Maybe 2 months or so after, when he had finally realized I was there and met me, things drastically changed. And I think Kara was one of the first to see it. Connie's sister, she had started noticing Aaliyah had came home one time, and she found a large bruise on the inside of her arm and another bruise on her hip, which you could very visibly see were finger marks on her arm, like she had been grabbed very hard and pushed down or picked up and hurt. And at that time, Aaliyah's entire attitude had changed every time she saw her dad. When he came over to pick her up, she would no longer be joyful. She would start screaming. She would run away. She would run out on the back patio and hide from him. Connie would have to go and get Aaliyah to try to give her over to her father. Aaliyah started pulling her eyelashes out, just basically grabbing them, ripping at them. She would dig her fingernails in Connie's back, screaming, trying to not let go. And the minute that he would take her, she would start kicking, she would scream, she would cry. And we would watch it the entire time he walked down the staircase, out the walkway, put her in the car. We could still hear her screaming and crying to get away from him. And that was when the first signs of abuse started happening, and we started watching a little more, and that's when Connie had first called CPS, and they came out to look at the bruises. And basically what they stated was the bruises weren't bad enough. They said, well, they're not enough for us to do anything, and they basically threw it away and ignored it. Stuff started persisting after that, and then Aaliyah would start making statements like, Daddy owies, Daddy hurts, I don't like Daddy. It got worse. She started talking about Grandpa owies, talking about her ex's father. And when Connie started filing abuse charges with the police department, that's when it went to court. And when it went to court, it was not a custody battle. It was for the abuse. And his lawyer managed to turn it into a custody battle and start fighting to say that the abuse is coming from Connie. Well, anybody who could see anything would obviously see that Aaliyah loved her mother. Every time the visitation came back, Aaliyah would be basically shaking, going, Mommy, 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 and she would go through everybody there, Kara, Linda, Daryl, and just happy to come home. And every time he would take her for his visitation, it would be the same thing. She would start screaming. She would run away, say, I don't want to go. I don't like it. At that time, the court started looking more and more, and they started granting him more custody. Basically, in the county, it's Placer County where Auburn is. It's very well known for a little inner circle of the judges and the lawyers and everybody that has anything to do with the case up there. And his lawyer is part of that inner circle because her husband is one of the two family law judges in that county. So she knows everybody very well. She knows anyone to do with anything in the court system she's friends with. And that's what we started running into. Anytime a new person would be introduced, as Aaliyah has a court-appointed attorney now, and the attorney would come in, and you're thinking, okay, she's going to do the best for the child. She never looked at the evidence that Connie presented to her about all the exchanges, the bruises, the screaming, everything that was going on in the whole court case. And she made a judgment against Connie after talking to his lawyer. And that's how everything went. We went into a STEP program, which is a co-parenting program to help everybody work out together. The judge had told Connie misleading information to get her to join that. And before they looked at any evidence, before they did anything, immediately they took Aaliyah away from Connie. And that was after they had talked to his lawyer, which they're all part of the inner circle. they took Aaliyah away from Connie and claim that she's teaching her to say this stuff. You can't teach a two-year-old to talk about daddy owing, daddy hurts. Later on, it progressed into daddy hurts my pee-pee. She came home with a bruise on her back that looked like she had been kicked. And at the same time, she had a big cut right at her hairline. And she managed to describe to us that she got kicked in the back and bumped her head on a table. We used that. We called the Auburn Police Department. We turned in evidence to them. Their sexual abuse investigator had just recently quit, so they handed it over to a normal investigator. He asked us to give him a little time to work it. It's going to take some time. Well, we gave him over 5 months' time before any of us started to contact him. First time I called him, he started yelling at me for contacting him. He didn't even want to know anything I had seen. He told me I didn't have any evidence he had never seen. He didn't care. He already made his judgment. I spent about a half hour on the phone telling him he was going to listen to me, and I gave him evidence that he did not know because he did not do his investigation. He didn't even know he had a witness contact list from Connie, so he didn't even know he was supposed to call us. He lost that information. But by that time, they had Connie had the video that has been on YouTube. It's been seen by most people, Daddy's Worm, where Aaliyah stated, and this is when she was about 2 years and 4 months old or so, she started stating stuff like, Daddy's Worm, he puts it in my mouth, it tastes yucky, it's one-eyed, it's hairy, it makes me cough, and she made a gagging sound in the video, and then she said he has to wipe it off with like a napkin. And for us, that's pretty valid evidence of sexual abuse. We turned that over to the police department and to everybody else. They didn't even view it before they pulled Aaliyah away from Connie. And now she's having to go through psychiatric evaluations. She'll get those back. They're clean. They say good stuff about her. They use it against her in court because his lawyer is part of the inner circle in Placer County. So basically, Connie being a single young girl is fighting an entire county on her own right now.
Right. There's one thing that I would like you to add. Right now, she is under a gag order. Otherwise, she would be on this show.
Yes.
Tell us about this gag order.
Well, right now, he filed a restraining order against her for civil harassment, because she has been trying to do, she's been doing anything she possibly can to get help and for anybody to help her, the CPS, APD, any local police department, anybody she can. And so one of the last-ditch efforts was to put the video online, to get it out there, to get people to see it, see if somebody knows somebody who can help, advise, anything. And she started with it. We had the original Daddy's Worm video was 27 minutes in length, start to end. When she started talking, it was Connie, her sister Kara, and Aaliyah in the bedroom, and it's in night vision because she was trying to go to sleep. It was late at night, so they turned the camera on, and they got on the bed, and Aaliyah climbed onto the floor. She's no longer comfortable in the bed. She said she's scared of beds now after everything started happening to her, and Connie and Kara basically just sat there and let Aaliyah talk. And the only thing, they would ask a question every now and then just to get clarification. And Aaliyah basically talked for the whole time straight, and that's when she was talking about Daddy's Worm is yucky, he puts it in my mouth, etc. And he had that erased off of MySpace. So we posted it on YouTube, which has a 10-minute length, so we had to actually cut the video down because you can only have a 10-minute video on YouTube. So we had to cut it down to 10 minutes in length, post that on there, and right now that's at about 15,000 views. And he's basically citing civil harassment because he doesn't want any of this evidence online and nobody to see it. So he convinced the judge to put a gag order on her to where she can no longer post this online, she can't talk about him, she can't blog about him, nothing. She never once stated his name, she never once stated violence against him. She just put this online and basically said, this is what we see. How do you guys take it?
Right.
Everybody else takes it the same way that we do, that she's talking about sexual abuse, and he's trying to quiet her and shut her up and get this evidence thrown out so nobody will see it. So,
okay.
As you're stating,
I think that gives us a pretty clear picture. I want to give the rest of the panel an opportunity to talk, and I'd like to start with Tim. Tim, you're the grandfather. What have you got to say? You must be horrified.
Well, yes, it's very frustrating to see that there's very clear evidence that this child has been abused, and that the court system, this has gone through five different judges, and we cannot get a judge to even look at the video, not even the one who issued the restraining order. She asked the child's attorney, who's court-appointed, who's a part of this system, as Daryl described it, if she had seen it. And she stuttered and stuttered and stammered and stuttered and then finally told the truth and said no. Well, the judge ordered her to watch it. This is what we're going through with this. This is a repetitive process. It's like the skin of an onion. They put layer upon layer upon layer of false accusation against my daughter, Connie, and all the while doing it and refusing to view any evidence whatsoever. And this claim is perpetual. It's been buried and buried and buried. And all Connie is trying to, and Daryl and everyone else is trying to do, is to get the truth so someone who can see it will see it. And even as of this last week, that hasn't happened.
Nobody in the court systems, you mean?
Correct.
The cops still haven't looked at it either?
Daryl can answer that in dealing with APD much better than
yeah.
I could.
When I first called the detective, which I was seeing after 5 months, and he was telling me there was nothing I knew that he needed to know, I started questioning him, have you looked at this? Have you looked at this video? And he said, oh, have you looked at this video? No. Have you read this statement? No. Then I asked him, have you seen the Daddy's Worm video? And he said, no, he had not seen it. And at that time, we basically told him that he needs to do his job. Or I told him on the phone, I said, you need to do your job. This is a child's life in danger right now. And you're sitting on all this evidence, and you haven't even taken the time to watch it. And at that time, he had not seen it. I don't know if he has now. He basically, it was, I believe, the following week or very, very, very short time after that, that they actually took Connie away after, I'm sorry, Aaliyah away from Connie after that time and gave him full custody. So I don't know. Ever since then, we've never been in contact with them. They basically said, we're done. Nothing happened. We did our full investigation. So if their full investigation includes not looking at any of our evidence and not calling anybody on her list, we don't feel that's a very thorough investigation. It's not protecting the child how she should be.
Daryl, didn't this officer call back and say that he did watch the video and apologize to you and to Connie?
He did call Connie and apologize to her after, because when she called him one night after she had brought Aaliyah home, who was very, after her week visitation with the father, was very ill, basically just laying on Connie's lap, we took her to the hospital and tried to get an investigation to see if some sexual abuse had happened, and they needed authorization from the police department to even look at her. So they called him, and he called her back at that time yelling and screaming at her. And then it was the next day, I believe, that I called him and returned it back to him, asking if he had ever looked at this, ever looked at this, ever looked at this. And I do recall something, him calling back and stating that he was sorry, but I don't honestly recall if he had looked at the worm video or if he had just looked at some of the other evidence. We had given them stacks of evidence, stacks of video exchanges, transcriptions, statements from people saying what they have heard Aaliyah say and what they have seen her do. And it's been about a year now since that happened, and I don't really recall why he was apologizing, but I do know he was apologizing because he realized he had not thoroughly done his job at that time.
Tim, you must be kicking yourself for letting her return to California.
Yes, that's been a bone of contention between she and I for quite a while and in the family, but she fled to Alaska because of physical abuse of her and the baby from the baby's father. She was up here about 7 months before any contact. Well, not any contact. They were talking on the phone for the 7 months that they had been up here up until the point of an impasse. And at that time, then he filed an emergency ex parte hearing stating that she was going to flee the country with the child. She could have had jurisdiction, which I don't know if a lot of people understand jurisdiction, law jurisdiction, but the baby had been in Alaska for a total of a little more than 7 months, which would have placed her under Alaska jurisdiction rather than California court jurisdiction. And when she went back, that was put back into California jurisdiction, which is why she cannot leave right now. So her going back has been a great problem. This has systematically been played right into the hands of what her attorney has wanted to gain the control to do exactly what is going on.
But wasn't she assured when she left that they would be helping her? And
yes, she was.
And that's the only reason she actually made the move?
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes. The court system said that he would be under a restraining order, that he would only have supervised visitation. His visitation was by his father, his mother, and his sister.
That was.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, we see how much good that was.
Right.
I do want to get to everyone that is taking time out to talk with us this afternoon. Kara, what can you add to this horrible, horrible story?
Excuse my voice, I've been sick, but hard to even know where to begin because I've seen everything from Connie and Dustin's relationship throughout the years to living with them while she was pregnant, you know, the after pregnancy and moving up to Alaska, going to the doctor with her and hearing what the doctor had to say to her, and her coming back down. I just want to let everyone know that it has been an abusive, physically, mentally, relationship with Connie and Dustin, and nobody has seen how he works and how he will do something horrible to her and would apologize and send cards and flowers. There was a diamond ring. Tons of empty promises telling her that they're going to be a family and that he loves her. And, I mean, this was a constant thing after everything that he did, every abusive thing that he did to her. And I know that when Connie did come back and that they had contact, that was, I believe, part of the reason. You know, she longed for the wanting the family together, which every woman would understand. But back to the Leah, I have seen him having supervised visitation at our family's house, being changed to his family, and her going with him. I have actually had to be the one at the exchanges to give Aaliyah to him multiple times because I worked during the day and Connie worked at night and we would switch watching Aaliyah. And I remember the first time that I saw the change in Aaliyah and how she reacted to him and me looking at him like, what did you do to her? Because she has never acted that way towards you before. I've seen them play. I've seen her play with him. And it has gotten worse to her skating Daddy Owie's, Grandpa Owie's, where she is hurt, where they've hit her. She has had multiple nightmares that are heart-wrenching. She wouldn't sleep in her bed. She didn't want to get near her bed. She didn't want the lights off. Multiple nights of us staying awake with her and just rubbing her back, and nobody had seen these symptoms other than close family and friends, and even in court, the judge actually had stated, well, my sister says, well, all of you're saying that I'm coaching her and saying these things, but all of these people on this list have been witnesses, and the judge goes, well, that's your family. Like, we have no say in what we've seen. And I just...
In other words, the judge doesn't believe the family and certainly doesn't want to believe any independent witnesses because they're not family.
Exactly. Catch 22.
Right.
Crispin.
Yes.
We haven't heard from you. I'm sure you have something to add to this terrible saga.
Yeah, I haven't been around as much as Kara. Kara's been through this whole thing, you know, side by side with Connie, you know, because they've lived together. But I have seen, you know, abuse. The abuse went right before Connie went up to Alaska, Connie fleeing to Alaska. And then last year I was also around to witness when they took Aaliyah away for 50-50 custody and when she would come home from his visitations and then have to go back, I witnessed her behavior there. You know, I saw her, you know, screaming and not wanting to go to his house and digging her nails and begging Connie, you know, please don't make me go, please don't make me go. And, you know, sometimes she would come home. It would take her a couple days to warm up when she would come home, like to even start talking because she was so depressed from having to go there and just drained coming home. And all she wanted to do was just sit with Connie, you know, and just be comforted. And then she would finally start talking about what he would do to her. And, you know, we ended up taking her to the hospital a couple times in the 2 months that I was there because of her coming back and being sick and just different things. It was to a point where I was sitting on the couch watching TV one day, and she went to go grab something, and I said, Aaliyah, stop it. You can't do that. And she just freaked out. She just started screaming, crying, and ran into the corner and was like she was going to be hit. And I was like, oh, my goodness. I couldn't believe it. And I was like, Aaliyah, you're okay. You know, just tried to comfort her. And I couldn't believe it. I saw her choking and slapping her dolls, you know, telling them they're bad and they're dead and you stop crying right now and, you know, just different things acting out, you know, obviously what he's been doing to her. But that's basically, you know, what I've seen. And I've been to the courtroom. It just makes you sick to go in there. And they just, through lies and deception, have pretty much railroaded Connie. And nobody is listening to the evidence. We've never been contacted. You know, it's just sick. Nobody's doing their job.
I want to go to Sarah, but before I do that, I'm looking at a question that just came in. And this is something I hadn't previously heard about. A suburban tailing the mum and sister?
Yeah.
Yes.
This is Kara. I was leaving to go to work one morning, and it was really, really early. And when I had pulled out on the front road, I am always checking my mirrors because I'm quite the fast driver. And I'm always looking around to see who's around me, and there was a car that followed me for about 25 minutes up until almost the exact road that I had to turn on where I work. And I just thought that it was weird, and I had mentioned it to my sisters when I had got home. You know, I just thought this was really weird that this car was behind me from this point to this point, all the way up to the point where I was supposed to turn on the road to go to work, where the business was. And then, Kristen, do you want to...
Yeah, and then the other day, I came home from work, and I saw Connie was parked out front of the apartment complex. So I stopped and I called her, and I said, Connie, what are you doing? And she said, somebody was following me, so I just pulled in. I didn't want to drive home, you know, all the way home. And I said, okay, well, I'm here now, so come on, let's go. And she goes, well, they drove into, she goes, I don't know where they went. So we pulled back to where we live, where we park, and she goes, we were walking into our house, and she goes, there's the car, there's the vehicle. They had blacked out tinted front windows, and there was two people sitting in it. And I said, okay, you know, show me. So she showed me, and we walked into the house, and I walked back out to go see, you know, if somebody was still sitting there. And I just took my phone and walked over and took a picture of it. So
good.
Send it to us. We'll post it.
Yeah. So I walked over and I took a picture of it, and I walked back in the house, and I said, you know, we need to be careful. It's not the first time, you know, that's happened. And so now we're just keeping an eye out.
Get a tag number on it, too.
Yeah.
Okay.
If you can possibly get the tag number.
Okay. I took a picture of the license plate, so I don't know if we can zoom in and see, but I'm not sure.
Well, yeah, ship us a copy of the picture.
Okay.
We'll do what we can. Okay, I do want to get to Sarah. Sarah is one of Connie's best friends, I think. Sarah,
yes.
Tell us what you want to tell us.
Well, Connie and I have been friends since seventh grade, which is about 13 years. And I've actually known Dustin since freshman year of high school, so 2 years later. And I've seen their relationship from the very beginning and how possessive he was of her. He's very controlling, and I knew before she ever told me that he had been abusing her. So they did an off and on thing for quite a few years, and then she ended up pregnant, and they moved in together, and Kara moved in with them as well. During Connie's pregnancy, I spent a lot of time at the house with her. She had a kind of rough pregnancy and couldn't really leave very often. So I would go up and spend time with her. And so I've been around, you know, long times in their whole relationship. And after Dustin became abusive towards Aaliyah as well, when Aaliyah was a baby, by way of trying to harm Connie and harming Aaliyah in the meantime, yelling at Aaliyah. And Connie took Aaliyah to Alaska. I still kept in contact with Connie on the phone and everything. And when she came back with Aaliyah, my husband and I spent a lot of time, Connie and Aaliyah, and we always liked my husband, liked playing with him. And about May or June of 2007 is when I noticed Aaliyah starting to act really weird towards my husband. She wouldn't want to play with him. She would kind of cower down a little if he would make any sudden movements toward her. And I thought that it was really strange. Sorry?
I know this is really hard. Take a deep breath. We'll come right back to you. I do have a caller on the line. I'm guessing they're coming in through Skype because they've got the mysterious 111 area code. What's your name and what's your question or comment?
Hello?
Hello.
My name is Dr. Jan. I'm a former police officer, and I am a physician's assistant. My question is for the family is, have you taken this child to a pediatrician?
Yes.
Okay. The pediatrician, by law, has to notify the authorities of any sexual abuse.
It's my understanding. Go ahead, Kara. I'm sorry.
Well, I know that Connie had taken her to the pediatrician when we found bruises on her back, and Aaliyah, for 2 weeks, I've been complaining about her butt hurting, and it was right down, like, by her hip and her tailbone area, and I had pressed on it, and Aaliyah screamed, and it had been bothering her for 2 weeks. Connie, I know, took her to the pediatrician, and Connie had told the pediatrician about the physical abuse and her belief that this is going on and everything, and the pediatrician, I think she referred her to have Aaliyah get an x-ray, and Aaliyah has only had one. There hasn't been multiple x-rays like his lawyer states, but she was x-rayed and there was no broken bones, thank goodness, and but there was bruise, and that's all I know about that. That
yes,
she'd have
can
to
I add something
more about that.
But have they checked? Have they checked the genital area?
Tim, go ahead.
Oh, I'm sorry. I just want to have somebody actually checked the genitalia area to see if the hymen has been
broken.
I'm not
sure. I know that the first physician's appointments that she went to were for the physical abuse. Well, then when signs started coming out that she was being sexually abused, that's when Connie went, and that's she had to call APD to get permission to have her checked for sexual abuse, and he was the one that said no, and that's when Connie was flipping out on him. You know, he hadn't read any of the evidence. He said, you know, you're taking this child to the pediatrician, you know, so many times, you've been to CPS 11 times, and he didn't verify it. That was part of the reason why after he watched the video, he called back and apologized to Connie about you know, him not doing his job and not reading whatever or saw the video. And I think he even stated that she had a good case, and then nothing has come from it. So Connie, when she did take her in for the sexual abuse check, he did not verify it.
Okay. Well, we had a similar case out here where I live, and the way that they got somebody to notice was they went to the media, because these are elected officials and they don't like to be in the media, especially around election time when they have to be reelected. So my suggestion, and you could take it for what it's worth, is get to the media, because they love this kind of stuff.
Okay.
And somebody's going to listen, and somebody's going to get, and you'll be surprised how fast things will turn around for you.
Okay. And that's part of what we've been doing. That's why we're you know, that's why we put it on the internet, tried to get help, and,
not
you know,
the internet,
in the beginning stages of.
You want the TV stations, the internet.
Okay.
You want TV stations where you live, where these elected officials live.
Okay.
And I guarantee you things will change.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you.
That is actually very good advice, and I will say that, you know, even though I guess I'm cutting my own throat because I'm the internet.
But what we care about is this little girl getting the help and you all getting the help you need.
Right. In fact, we had a discussion the other day, I think it was about another case. You know, I don't care who gets the story first. I just want the case resolved.
Right.
Exactly.
It's simple. Now,
well, I'd like to say something regarding the media.
Sure.
The media has been contacted through the internet. They have been referred to the baby's worm video. And the only media that has picked this up, Simon, are you and Jan. No one else has shown any interest in it whatsoever.
And I don't understand that. I genuinely don't. I mean,
they see what we see, and I don't understand it either.
I think maybe it's because it's not in a neat package that they can just pick up and run with. But I do want to mention a couple of things. And I'd really like to get everyone's comments on this. Two completely separate issues. On the subject of media, we contacted the Auburn newspaper. I can't remember
Auburn
the name
Journal.
Of it.
Auburn Journal.
Auburn Journal. And to cut to the chase, the person we talked to kind of said, yes, we know about the story, but the newspaper needs to stay in the good graces of the police.
That was helpful.
All right. Now, that bothers me enormously.
She even said that, she did say, too, that, wait, I forgot what I was going to say now, I lost track, that she does believe that there's a possibility, but she didn't verify any investigating or anything, but she said that they do need to stay in good graces of the police department.
Right. Now, the second interesting story, and there may be absolutely nothing to this, I mean, I'm reading into this, you know, things I shouldn't. I know lots of people in low places, and around 2 o'clock yesterday, I called the infamous Leonard Padilla. Surprisingly enough, he answered his phone personally, and him and I don't necessarily see eye to eye, but that's an entirely different story. But he did talk to me, and I asked about the case. And he said he hadn't really looked into it, but his nephew knew the father's family, and he didn't think there was much to the allegation. He was in a meeting, he was very busy, and he asked if I could call back in 2 hours when he would have more time to talk. For the second conversation, I had Jan on the line as well, and to say the least, it was strange. First, he denied any knowledge of knowing anything, then grudgingly admitted he had talked to Connie, but had done absolutely nothing to investigate the allegations. No mention of the nephew, and I don't know which nephew, but I do happen to know that one of his nephews is the bail bondsman that sort of he works with. I don't know what to make of that at all. Do any of you have any ideas, any comments?
My understanding is that Connie had spoke to him on the phone. And that's all I know.
That's pretty much all that we know.
He told her, Connie told me that his first response to her is, "Don't you lie to me, young lady." And she said, "I am not lying to you. Investigate this and you will see the truth of the matter." She had no idea of any connection to the family. So what happened from there, we don't know.
Right. My point is that in his first conversation, he mentions the nephew and the family link. In the second conversation,
he
skillfully avoids it.
Well, that's typical of Auburn and Placer County. It is exactly what this radio show is about today. It is the closed network of the good old boy club. And you butt heads against it every way you turn. And I'd like to give one more example of that. In court this last week, Dustin's attorney said that there was an reopened investigation, and Aaliyah's attorney, court-appointed attorney, affirmed that. Well, this has been going on now for almost a week, and still, no one on the contact list has been contacted.
Mm-hmm.
There's been absolutely no movement of this case in the defense of Aaliyah. So that will point automatically, that this is going to turn and be a Placer County stomping of Connie and Aaliyah once again. Mark my words.
Right. In fact, 9 days ago, count those, that's nine, comes right before 10, I talked with Auburn's finest, and I'm still waiting for a callback.
They're just burying it. The judicial system there is the exact same thing.
It's just a taste. You guys are just dealing with a taste of what we've been dealing with for these last 2 years.
Yeah, I believe you.
Yeah, but there is no doubt in our minds that there's something. And again, Jen and I were talking about this. We've had this same conversation several times. We have people that are sending us hate mail, you know, saying you guys are full of BS. You know, there's no story here. You know, the little girl's fine. And Jen and I's take on that is, number one, we believe that she's not fine. And number two, even if this is some glorious hoax, it's still a win-win situation. If it's a hoax, the little girl's fine. If it's
right.
not a hoax and we can expose it, the little girl will be fine. Win-win.
Correct.
She will have a chance of surviving at least.
Simon, I have something to add here, too. And in every court case that Connie has battled against them, obviously she's trying to get custody back and to get Aaliyah out of his hands. But at the same time, she has told him numerous times that if they have to take her out of his hands and put her in a foster home until this is solved, at least she'll be safe. Everybody will know she will be safe at the time when the investigation is going. And they will not even listen to her on that. And she's doing that so they know that she's not just trying to get Aaliyah back, that she is fighting for her safety. That's all everybody in this case cares about.
Right.
And they keep looking that right now she's safe, but even last week in supervised visitation where Connie has right now, Aaliyah walks in, falls on her mom's lap, cries, and holds her mom the entire visitation. And when it's time to go, the supervisor who watches over and records everything that happens literally had to pry Aaliyah off of Connie because she would not let go of Connie, and she was screaming and crying, begging not to go back with her dad. And that was last week, and this is still going on, and nobody will look at those visitation reports to see how she's playing, making her animals die. She's singing songs saying, "Aaliyah, Aaliyah, your mommy's dead." They won't look at the evidence that's still going on. They think, well, okay, now she's fine because nothing's happening. They won't view any of that evidence now. And all Connie is trying to do here is we're just trying to fight for Aaliyah's safety and get her out of his hands.
Are the FBI involved in any shape or form?
Connie has talked to them, has written letters and personally interviewed with them over the phone, and that's all we can say at this time. And I know there are certain preclusions for their ability to be involved in things, and they may be very well listening and observing what's going on as best they can. I don't know.
Let's hope so.
Okay, I'm going to put out another general question to all of you. It's mentioned that, you know, the only press coverage that you seem to be getting is from us folks here in the depths of Mississippi, believe it or not. What can we do? You know, what needs to happen? Give us some ideas. We're running with this story, and we're prepared to keep running with it.
Well, I think my personal opinion is the officer that just came on the show and asked the question, I'm sorry, I don't remember her name, but the trying to include the media, the local press in this, is for some reason stonewalled just as much as trying to contact and get any information from Auburn Police Department. I think it's so hard for people to conceptually understand just how far all of this is intertwined. Like Auburn Journal said, no, we have to stay in the good graces of Auburn Police Department. Well, you know, there's a therapist, a psychologist, that does the psychological evaluation of both parents and what's called a 730 custody evaluation. All of the information that was given to the police and CPS was also given to him. Any court-mandated reporter, which he would be, upon seeing that video, would have to report it to the police. Now, either he looked at it and decided not to comment or do anything about it because it would have blown every writing that he wrote about Dustin out of the water. Or he specifically chose to be blind to the facts. Either one is a dereliction of his duty as a representative in Placer County court system.
Well, and the judge had also stated, I'm going to send you guys to one of my good buddies. He's a psychologist, you know, in court.
Yeah.
So
well, they're all
also friends with the judge.
Yeah.
I trust what he has to say. That's what he said.
Mm. That is so wrong.
Now, I'm horrified. The more I dig into this case, and in fact, you know, and the more Jan digs into it, the worse it becomes. That this is an appalling,
exactly.
appalling miscarriage of justice.
It absolutely is.
What we haven't done yet, but. It's definitely coming up the to-do list, is to start looking at the other side. And I have a sneaking hunch that's when the sparks will definitely start to fly.
Well, this is all the truth. And for investigative reporting, you do have to look at both sides.
Right.
Somebody who only looks at one side and makes a decision is a fool.
Right.
So investigation into both sides is necessary for the truth of the matter to come into full fruition for people to see. And we look forward to that.
Mm-hmm.
But don't forget Aaliyah's side and Aaliyah's voice, just because she's two and a half and she tries to describe things the only way that she knows how doesn't mean that it shouldn't be accounted for because she's so young. And the video is just a small percentage of what I have seen and heard her say, and it breaks my heart that nobody has done anything about it. Just you take both parents out of perspective and look at what this daughter has to say and what this little girl has gone through. And
yeah, leave both sides of the family out. Leave them both out and just
That's
listen
right.
to what
it's
this
just,
child says.
Exactly. I mean, a child is
what is most important.
She's what this is about, is her protection. Her voice, it has to be from her. I mean, it seems like they have to listen to her.
I'm going to put in a quick plug here. If any of our listeners have any questions or comments, our switchboard is open, and you can reach us at 646-378-1120, and we certainly... would love to hear what you think about this case. Clearly, Jan and I are on board that something's going on, and we definitely want to get to the bottom of it. Daryl, how is Connie holding up? I mean, she must be under so much stress, just unreal.
Well, it's actually hard to talk about how hard she has it right now. She can't live her life. She can't do anything for herself. Everything she does, from the moment she wakes up to the moment she goes to bed, is Aaliyah. She has trouble going to work right now because she's fighting so hard just to maintain with everything she's trying to do to protect her daughter right now. And it takes every ounce of strength. She has trouble eating. She has trouble sleeping. She has trouble doing anything because she is so stressed out right now because she knows what's happening to her daughter and nobody will listen to her. And it is tearing her apart. I do everything I can just to try to help her. I'll make her dinner whenever I can. I'll put food in front of her and say, please eat, please drink water. She doesn't even have time to do that for herself right now because all she cares about is her daughter's safety. And it tears me up just seeing that because she cannot live a minute for herself right now. And this has been going on for so long that it's tearing her apart. I know what she's going through, and I can't even imagine at all what she's going through. I feel nothing compared to what she feels right now for Aaliyah. For her daughter. And I know everybody in the family feels that, but for Connie, it's her daughter. It's her flesh and blood. who's being harmed, and nobody will help her.
Nobody will help her.
Oops. We have a couple of new callers on, and I unmuted one of them, but I think they're listening to the show on their computer speakers, and that gives a nasty three-second echo. So please turn the volume down. In the meantime, I'm going to go to area code 707. What's your name and what's your question for us?
Hi, I go by the name of Mermaid, but what I wanted to ask is for people that are listening to the show that live in California to contact the state attorney general about this. This is obviously judicial corruption, and to write letters, because you have to do this in writing, to the state review judicial review board down in San Francisco. Because this is, you know, Placer County is known for doing this, and the CPS up there is really awful as far as not following through on cases, and I would really like to see people push this politically, because I think that's the fastest way to get results for this family is to get outside of the county.
I think that's a very valid point.
Sounds like good advice. I did at least try it.
And the addresses for those people are listed on Simon's blog, so that people don't even have to bother looking it up. But the addresses and information are there. And writing letters to the Placer County District Attorney would be good, too. Email address there. Because I really believe that this child needs to be saved. It is really ridiculous, and I know how frustrating it is to deal with small-town courts. I mean, I went through a very awful situation where my husband's attorney was the former district attorney. I know exactly how bad it can be.
Yeah, firsthand.
Okay.
Thank you.
Yep.
Thank you.
Thank you for the advice. Okay, I'm gonna try this caller again. Okay. We have a caller from the Child Protection Community. What's your name? What's your question for us?
Hey, Simon and Jan, how are y'all today?
Hi, Joey. Joey Tillman.
Hey, the reason I was calling, the question I've got, I'd like to get the contact numbers for all the local media there, the email addresses, to me, one of the reporters, I mean a list of each department and each newspaper, and had a mass email sent out repeatedly with the same title. Somebody was bound to open this thing, and it's going to give attention to it. The district attorney idea is a great idea. You can't do that on one because if you're not in the district or you're not resident, it's hard to fill out some of the things in California. So it is a direct address.
Joey, you're breaking up something fierce. Maybe this is something we can take offline. We'll if you send us an email of what you're looking for, we'll do our best to compile a complete list of.
He wants to give us the list.
Oh, you want to give us the list? Okay, if you email it to us, I'll make sure that it goes out to all of the interested parties.
Very nice, Simon. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, and thank you for all your help, Joey. Okay. Tim, let's go back to you. Grandfathers always know lots of stuff. So where do we go from here? What's next?
Well, I think the only way to proceed with this is exactly what's been discussed on this show. What my fear is that they are going to do everything that they can do to bring pressure upon Connie, because they have, through this, she has brought some very ugly things to light. And as I said before, the only way that this is going to get out and get anything done is through the press. And I cannot understand why no one wants to pick it up. Not Sacramento Bee. Sacramento Bee runs things about Sacramento County, CPS, and the atrocities and the deaths of children related to their handling of them. And nobody cares. This is like an abstract setup. And the only thing that I can think of is the connection through the family, shutting every investigation they can down through their attorney, through her connections in the county, and it's despicable. people have no conceptual idea of really how corrupt this county is. And you've labeled it as the Dukes of Hazzard. It's the Dukes of Hazzard squared.
Yeah.
Let's go around the table here. Kara, what else have you got for us?
I actually have a waiting. I wanted to comment on what Sarah was saying earlier.
Sure.
About when her husband would play with Aaliyah. My boyfriend has been around. We started dating a couple years ago, and she's speaking about the fear that Aaliyah had in men, and my boyfriend would be like, she doesn't even want to get near me or anything. And I had asked him to keep on playing with her to try so that she can build that trust, because I don't want her growing up thinking that all men are horrible.
Right.
And he played hide-and-go-seek with her. He played with her all the time. He was really good with her. And she had gone up to him and gave him a hug and a kiss and said, I love you, Moko. His name's Michael. And he was overwhelmed and so happy that she had done that, because it had been kind of a long process for her to build that trust with him. And she has that fear in men when men are around or there's boys around. I just wanted to comment on that.
She's too young to have to go through that.
Well, and there was, this is Sarah, one day Connie brought Aaliyah into my office, and I work in a professional setting, and one of my male clients came in, and I'd been letting Aaliyah play with a beach ball that we had left over from a barbecue that we had at our office. And the moment he walked in the door, she had just kicked the ball, and it was over by him. So he, you know, thinking to himself, oh, she wants me, you know, to play with her. So he goes to kick the ball back to her, and she laid down on the ground, covered her head and face with her arms, and started crying hysterically.
Oh my
and
God.
We're talking, he was 5 feet away from her, and he was going to kick her. That's just the pattern that began. That was in July of 2008 that happened.
Yeah, I mean,
or,
she
sorry,
would
July
come
of 2007.
This is Kristen, and she would come home, and there was points where she would actually, you know, accidentally spill something or drop it, and she would just automatically be, sorry, over and over and over, just covering like she was going to be hit. And it's just, you know, so sad, and, you know, we're trying to do everything we can to save her, and we keep seeing her coming home and having these fears of just doing anything. It's like she didn't know what she could do and couldn't do. I don't know, it was just really sad, and it happened all the time.
Okay, I do have a question. I know that you haven't managed to get much publicity yet, but we're working on that, and trust me, if we create enough flames, other organizations will start picking this story up. Where does Connie stand with legal representation?
She has none. When she was in Alaska, because she was in Alaska and they started a proceeding in California, she hired an attorney to represent her there to answer those questions. And they were trying to extradite the baby itself. So that was the first attorney she had. The second attorney she had was a very well-known family law attorney, Elliot Severe, and he retired while this case was going on. So it's been a constant trying to find legal counsel. The third attorney that she had, paid a retainer, went to court, went over and spoke to Dustin's attorney and the child's attorney and CPS and STEP, and came back with a very intimidated and scared look on her face. During that court session, she basically said nothing in defense of Connie. Connie fired her after that. She would shush Connie because they sat down for a half hour before about what was going to be said and what the actions that they were going to specifically take, none of which happened. So legal counsel in the court system of Placer County is a difficult thing to obtain because nobody, if you read and you look around and you see what people say, nobody wants to be in family law court in Placer County. So it all comes down to money. Connie, we have all helped her as much as we possibly can. Connie has sold basically everything she has.
I've sold all my stuff also.
And we have done everything that we can do in that department. And
there are advocacy groups. Have you looked into any of those? See if you can get some free legal help that would be outside of Placer County?
We're working on it. We're calling around and, you know, we're trying to get things done. So.
And we have been, but we're not aware of any advocacy groups where they give free legal help to civil matter cases and family law.
Especially sexual abuse cases.
Yeah.
Right.
Well, I'll tell you what. Jen and I have just put that on our list of things to look up. And if we can find anything, we certainly will pass the information along.
Thank you.
We'll definitely do what we can.
Daryl,
thank you so much. I'm sorry.
No, that's okay. Carry on, Tim.
Thank you so much for all that you've done.
Oh,
I know,
our pleasure.
And I see that the people that are really interested in the cause, and it's not a blindness. You're not operating on this in blindness or taking anyone's word for it. And thank you very much for the honesty and the integrity of investigative reporting on this.
Well, like we said before, we do believe in the story. We don't believe it's something made up or a hoax. But then again, you know, you have to understand, too, that in this day and age, there's so much of that going on. And I do understand some of the people's negative thoughts about it. But like you said, we have checked into a few things. We've talked to y'all. And we have formed our own opinion on it, judged by what we have found out from outside of the family and from talking to y'all.
The thing that sticks in my craw is the fact that every quote official line we have tried to explore, we either get ignored or shut down.
Right.
And that's absolutely the worst thing to do. You can ask my wife, you know, ignoring me is like a very bad thing to do. I'll be back.
Now, I do have this to say, too, talking about being ignored and all, and I'm not sure if it means anything. One of our bloggers did write to the Sheriff's Department, is it Placer County? And she did get a response from them. They said that it was all due to a custody battle, like y'all said, and that they were, they had in the process of checking into the website to see the owner's name and to possibly put get charges on the owner for fraud. Okay, well, that was all. I mean, people took that as what it said, and they said, okay, well, then it's got to be a hoax. It is not a hoax just because of this letter. I'll tell everybody that. We talked to the law enforcement, and as soon as they found out we were from Blogger News, which is a news organization online, they didn't want to talk to us. They talked to her because she was just somebody that was interested in something she had heard. It wasn't because this was going to be in the media. As soon as they found out we were media, they shut off and didn't want to tell us anything. If what he told her was the truth, how come they couldn't tell us the same thing?
Well, that's part of the game.
Exactly. That's my point. That's what I'm saying. If they can tell somebody that's just an interested party that heard the story and are interested to see what they can do, and they could tell her this, but they come to us. I mean, when we go to them, they didn't come to us. We went to them. They wouldn't talk to us. And, I mean, it was like, Cole, cut off. Okay, we'll talk. We'll give you a call back in a day or two or whatever, tomorrow. But never, we have still, like Simon said, it was last Friday, I believe, we called, and we still have not heard back from them. And, I mean, so why can they send one letter to somebody and not talk to us at the same time? That's why I threw the letter out. I said that I don't believe it.
Well, let me expand a little bit on that. First, it was told that it was Rockland Police Department that let that email out, and I believe it was the Roseville Police Department.
Right. It was. Yeah. This email. No, actually, the email that I'm talking. You talking about the email?
Yes.
Yeah.
No, the one that I talked. No, it was from one of our bloggers. One of somebody that I know.
Okay.
That she had personally wrote to the sheriff's department, and the email that was returned to her, the response, come from the Placer County Sheriff's Department.
Okay. Well, Connie has addressed that in writing and in telephone calls.
I told her about it.
Yeah. She has addressed that with them, and they openly said that it was due to them getting responses of this being a scam, a hoax, and a fraud.
Right.
We've heard nothing else from it, and I can say very clearly and definitely that every donation that has been collected, first of all, has not been touched, not one cent of it yet. It is for retaining an attorney in representation to fight for Aaliyah.
Right.
When that attorney, when that either the money is sufficient enough to retain an attorney and to support that attorney in this effort, that will be turned over to that attorney. The trust, if one is set up or however they deem it to be set up, for the any further donations to receive will go directly to them without any involvement of SaveAaliyah.com, Connie, or the family.
Okay, give us that website one more time for our listeners.
It's www.SaveAaliyah.com.
Okay.
Okay. And I'll say this to our listeners. I believe in this case. Jan believes in this case. If you do have some spare change, please give it to these people. I really want to see some justice done, because justice denied is not the American way. I mean, that's not what we expect. But alas, it seems to be all too common. We're getting down to the last strokes here. Daryl, you've got any parting thoughts for us?
Well, my main thought is, once again, is that we're fighting a small town thing, and just like Jan's story, is that Aaliyah's father comes from a fairly prominent family in Auburn. His dad is a baseball coach. He was at the local high school for years, and now he's at the local college, and they are a fairly well-known family in the community. And I think that has a lot to do with all of the roadblocks that we've seen with APD and CPS and the court system, is because they grew up in that town. They graduated from that high school. They know everybody in the town. They're all friends, everybody in the court system. They're all friends. Their lawyer is a family friend who, like I said earlier, her husband is one of the two family law judges in the county.
Oh,
so we just
man.
Have tons of roadblocks ahead of us. That how do you break that down? You know, you're fighting one big organization that, no matter what the truth is, they're going to bond together and go with their club, and that is our main roadblock right now.
Okay, we are down to the last few seconds of the show. I'm being nagged by the producer.
I want to thank everyone that took part today, particularly Tim Bedwell, Kara Bedwell, Kristen Bedwell, Sarah, I can't remember your last name, and Daryl, can't remember your last name either. You can rest assured that we here at Blogger News are going to do everything we possibly can to move this case forward. I mean, what's happened is appalling and shocking. And it, you know, in this day and age, should not happen.
No, it shouldn't. And my prayers go to each and every one of y'all. And please tell Connie we're pushing for her. And happy Mother's Day to all you mothers out there, too, by the way. So just tell her we're here and we're not giving up.
Oh, and one last thing. If you get some news, send it to us.
By all means.
We will use it. Okay, so thank you ever so much, everyone.
Thank you,
Jan and Simon.
Thank you.
Thank you.
God bless you all. Bye-bye.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
This is Simon Barrett and Jan Barrett thanking everyone for taking part today. And I do hope you'll join us tomorrow. Tomorrow's show at 3 o'clock will be featuring the Kaylee Anthony and Haley Cummings case. It should be a good show. We have William Cobra Storbs, the bounty hunter come private investigator come bail bondsman. He's always an exciting guy to listen to. So hopefully we will talk to you all tomorrow. Goodbye.
Bye, everyone.